Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM Minneapolis St. Paul. Online and archived at kfai.org, the community's true voice.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best Of.
The Hallucination.
Good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, hit me cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanja Hade. Hey, Kutagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. So happy to have Robert Lilligren, Native American Community Development Institute CEO, back on this week. And we're going to have an intense talk here, all four segments with Robert, if he has the capacity, because I know he's a busy guy. But a lot going on, and a lot going on with Native American Community Development Institute, too. I was just down there, too, and saw the great booklets that they're handing out, and the market happened today, and it was good to be down there and see relatives. Robert, thank you so much for coming on, as always.
Yeah, bonjour, Robert. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. Were you at the market today? I must have missed you.
Yeah, I was there for about a half hour. Yeah, I got there early. I had a pre-record I had to do at this studio out in Eden Prairie with a client, and so it was I was short-lived there, and then I was checking out what's going on at the Indian Center on the 25th. I'm going to do a live show there, and that's on your Thursday. So we're going for the gala there, and I know you guys have two tables, so I'm going to bring one of my portable chairs and join you. Oh,
you're always welcome. Yeah, that's a great place to start. Next Thursday is the 50th anniversary gala of our Minneapolis American Indian Center. It should be great. Originally, NACDI, our organization, was just going to take one table, but so many people were interested in attending, we expanded it to two. I'm sure we could squeeze you in there, Robert, if you need a place to sit. But yeah, this is a big deal. 50 years, and folks who listen regularly probably know that we just have a new renovation and addition, and it's just spectacular. So there's a lot to celebrate there.
Yeah, it really is. And a former student of mine, Bobby Wilson, will be there too as emceeing, I do believe.
So yeah, when he's emceeing, and I see he's doing a couple of MC gigs while he's here.
Yeah. Yeah, he did one at the Indian Center with, I believe it was the food they were just at your market too. They did a thing on Sunday, and he was
there. Yeah, Dream Wild Hell.
Thank you. Yeah, God.
They do their food, Native food tasting event, which is so very popular.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and Bobby Wilson was emceeing for that.
Well, and if people aren't aware who Bobby Wilson is, he's a writer, comedian, a 1491er, also Reservation Dogs writer. And he also was he acted in one of the series. I remember he owned a head shop, and also he was with Rutherford Falls. He was a regular on Rutherford Falls.
He was a regular. He was a writer there as well. And yeah, one of them, he's very funny, very talented, super successful. And one of the things I really am always impressed by with Bobby Wilson is how respectful he is to people and respectfully is to us elders, Robert, and that amazes me. And something I will never forget about him is that he was actually born in a house in the Phillips area. he's probably one of the youngest people that I've ever met that had a home birth. But and so folks who aren't from Minneapolis will know Phillips area is kind of the core of the Native community as well. So I just think that's fascinating.
Well, if you have the capacity, I'd love to have you join me and we can wrangle in some people on that day. I know you'll be busy shaking hands and stuff, but we'll start at 5 and people will be rolling in about the time we go live. So just throwing that out there. No, if you're busy, you know, putting your tux on and things like that, I'll understand. But
I'm going to be busy eating.
That doesn't happen until 7, though.
No, I would love to be on, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a great room to work.
Yeah.
And I just love that in our community, we have rooms to work, right? And so I'm really looking forward to it.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah. It wasn't that long ago we really didn't have it, right? We didn't have that place to see and be seen and connect with community leadership and things. So I'm excited.
Yeah, that's I'm just taking pause on that. That's exactly right. Jeez, good point. Oh, yeah.
Well, you'll know this back in the day. So folks who are familiar with the American Indian Culture Corridor on East Franklin Avenue will be familiar with a restaurant called Maria's. Maria is an Ecuadorian immigrant, it opened up as this little tiny one storefront restaurant. Now it's expanded to several storefronts. It's in the ancient traders building, a native owned building. And when it opened, I was in politics. I was a Minneapolis City Council member, and that became my go-to place to meet with folks and to schedule breakfast or lunch meetings. Yeah. And it's just a wonderful success story. When it first opened, East Franklin was kind of rough. And I remember the legendary tales of Maria's staff having to literally fight their way into work in the mornings, you know, through some of the criminal elements that were hanging out there. But I loved it from the beginning because it became a go-to spot for a lot of politicians or public people. And I was like, dang, here in Phillips, we didn't used to have a place to sort of see and be seen. And, you know, now we do. And now we have several. But back then it was really a new feeling. And I'm so proud of our community and our neighborhoods that we produced a place like that, and people clamor to be there, right? So,
yeah, you're absolutely right. What's interesting, too, I was able to, because I was going out to Eden Prairie where the AM 950 is after heading out there, got to pass Maria's, but also before that with the Native American Community Clinic, that place is hopping right now. Jeez.
Right. So another one of our legacy organizations, Native American Community Clinic, they are in process of constructing an incredible new facility, 6 stories, 2 stories of services, and then 4 stories of housing, if I'm not mistaken. And it's a big deal. I mean, this is like skyscraper kind of construction, you know, concrete construction, sort of a disruption. There's no parking anywhere around the area, but man, it's a huge enhancement to the community, to the American Indian Culture Corridor. And it's one of about, 6 major projects that are either in process or recently been completed, like the American Indian Center, or planned right in the Native community, Native-led projects. And so this is exciting. This is growth. This is, you know, how I view it. And again, being an elder, I just turned 65 this last summer. You know, and we were given such gifts from our elders and ancestors that founded American Indian Movement, and this density of Native organizations and services and presence along East Franklin Avenue in that area of American Indian Cultural Corridor. And so I'm concerned about what we do with this legacy, right? And so I really feel it being kind of in this, you know, generational trajectory, and just to see these things building on what was given to us by our, you know, our recent ancestors. I feel like, yeah, okay, we're doing them proud, right? This is what we should be doing. And so it's very gratifying to see.
Well, I am totally. We have more to talk about with the Avenue and what's going on and what's going on with Native American Community Development Institute. So I'm really happy that we started out in a good positive vibe here, because we got to get later on in the show talking the trenches. And I'm so happy that you could be with us
for
the whole hour, Robert. And I saw what you were doing last week, and my daughter was waiting tables on the mayor at the same event that you were at. So that was
Right. Dinner du Nord.
Yes, that was very cool. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and we're with Robert Lilligren, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come, we are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Robert Pilot. We are with Robert Lilligren. It's the Robert Show. The only person missing is Bob Blake from Red Lake, I think.
We'll have to have him on next week.
Yeah, we'll have to change the name of the show. Hey, and you're CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And yeah, a lot going on the Avenue, too, and a lot of positive things.
A lot. And one thing I'd love to talk about is, I don't know if you caught this, but this week on Good Morning America, they featured the Red Bears, which is a youth program. Yes. Did you see it?
Yes, I did. Somebody posted it. Yes.
Yeah. So this is an incredible youth athletics program. There's a really amazing community leader, Mukwa Roberts, who kind of reinvigorated the whole program. And so it's multiple sports, football, basketball. And he's really rebuilt the whole program from the ground up. And it was just, it's inspiring seeing Southside Red Bears, they call them. And our organization, NACTI, supports them by being their fiscal agent. And which is great, but those guys are just doing it. And so they were featured on Good Morning America. They were presented a $10,000 contribution and one of those great big checks on the air. And knowing Mukwa and the incredible work he does in the community, he can go to a lot with $10,000. And so it was just good to honor Mukwa, to honor their youth that participate. And we know what the outcomes, what improved outcomes we see when our youth are participating in programs like the Southside Red Bears.
Yeah, wow. Really good point. I'm really glad you brought that up, too. I got to get somebody on to talk about that. Really, it's amazing the good things that are happening and in Indian country, despite what's happening nationally. And it's just an amazing time we're living in. And you know, I will talk about that in a little bit after you have any more great things to talk about. I know you had a great update on, we've talked about it a couple times, where you have that great magazine with all the Native businesses and that thing.
Yeah, businesses and services. We call it the Resource Guide, the Community Resource Guide. And we just published a new version of it very recently. It's online as well at our website, NACDI.org, NACDI.org. And so we launched the online version first. We just recently released the print version. And we had an event at the Minneapolis American Indian Center last Friday, a little reception. And I mean, dozens, hundreds, scores, maybe hundreds of people came and took a lot of copies of it. And it's as comprehensive as we can make it. It has services, you know, health services, housing. It has businesses. On the back of it, there's a QR code where you can upload your business information, which you can put on the website right away, the online version. We can put in the next print version. And it's just, NACTI produced one of these about 12 years ago. Yeah. Wasn't nearly as comprehensive or extensive as this one, or quite as beautiful. We have cover art from Jonathan Thunder, renowned artist, and people kept saying for years, even just very recently, they'd stop into our office and say, "Oh, do you have any of those guides left?
Wow.
Those resource guides from 12 years ago?" And we're like, "Yeah, no, the new one's coming out." And we were able to leverage funding from the state, the health department, from a local health provider, Alina. We were able to bring on permanent staff, M. Mattson, and they just did a marvelous job on this and beefed up NACTI's storytelling and our communication so we can tell our story, but the community story even more thoroughly. And so it's just been a home run. People are loving it. People stopped in at the event on Friday at the Indian Center, and they were saying, "Oh, I'm so glad you did this again. I've missed this. We needed this thing," you know, and people mm-hmm. are really excited about it. They're taking cases of them to their own organizations and things. So, you know, people are on the corridor. You can stop in just about anywhere, I'm sure, and they would have some out. Or go online at NACTI.org and check out the resource guide.
Yeah, well, I saw them. They were out with the magazines at the coffee shop today. I saw those.
Oh, nice.
They had a nice little setting there. That's excellent. So next week, too, you have an important job. I do believe it's the same day. It's the same day as
the gala.
Yeah, and it has to do with pickles.
Yep, and you'll be there too, right? So,
well, I found out that I didn't return an email, so I'm not on the. I'm not on the. So
yeah,
like, okay.
They run a tight ship there at
Four
Sisters Farmers Market.
I was surprised and sad, but I still get some pickles.
You show up, right? So we're having we partner NACTI and Indian Health Board. Locally partner and hold our pickle off. It's a contest, a pickle contest. And I just love it. This is our fourth annual.
I think I've missed one. You know.
Yeah, the first one was over at Little Earth, at their garden, or their farm. And we kind of combine a little bit of politics, you know, and voter registration and voter outreach. We invite candidates to be present, where this is a municipal election year. Here in Minneapolis. And so there's categories, spicy, sweet, dill, and those are our cucumber categories. And then there's the other pickle. So you can pick a lot more than cucumbers. And man, people really respond. They love it. So I'll be a judge. I thought you were going to be a judge, too bad. Maybe next year.
Yeah, maybe
emails, Robert, and then. But it's fun, and community comes together. We're actually going to block off the whole street out in front of NACTI on 15th Avenue there, and have a kind of street fair. Make a street fair out of it. And our market manager, Destiny Jones, Ho Chunk Woman, really has amped it up a little. And then Indian Health Board's Cassandra Holmes is the key driver and organizer, and so it's going to be fun. And if folks are wondering about it, the NPR will be there as well. You'll be there, media will be there.
Yeah,
and NPR did a great story last year. Melissa Olson, native reporter at Minnesota Public Radio, did this great story. There's this hilarious picture of me sniffing on one of the pickle entries there, you know, getting the smell test. And they're bringing a whole cadre of reporters this year. So it's going to be big.
Yes, it is going to be big. And it's exciting. And people will be able to taste the pickles, too. So it's not just the judges. And that's what I like, is to get a little bit of everything.
Right. And we're doing it in a much more sort of orderly and hygienic way to get the tasting out there. And people are delivering their pickles early. It's going to be great. It's going to be so much fun. So I encourage people, that's next Thursday, 11 to 3, right in front of our building, the yellow building with Powell Grounds and All My Relations Arts. And the street will be blocked out. There'll be music and things. So, come on down. And
well,
then another very cool thing. What's that?
No, I said go ahead. I was going to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, all right. No, NACTI is also sponsoring a short film festival this Saturday. 6:30 to 9:30 at All My Relations Arts Gallery. Oh, I think that's where it is. I shouldn't be telling people if I don't.
Yeah. I saw some of the names of the short films in Ajawak, who was in he's a prominent actor and director and filmmaker, and he was in Iron Horse, I think. Was it called Iron Horse or Indian Horse? Indian Horse,
Indian Horse,
you can see in Netflix. He's got he's got a movie in. I saw that.
He's got a movie in there. It's called The Comedian. He does Ajwak's. Former NACTI staffer Elizabeth Day has a short in there called How the Bear Got a Short Tail. But there's 2, 4, 6 films. And so this is the first time we've done this in our All My Relations Arts Gallery. It's the brainchild of our gallery program director, Juliana Enright.
Yes.
And so she just took this and ran with it. And it's really going to be something.
Well, what I'm really excited, we got like, let me check the clock here. We only have like a minute or two left that we haven't talked any politics. We've just talked about joy. And I really, really like that. And one of the things, too, I was talking to somebody who's not from here, kind of about, you know, natives really stepping forward the last couple decades. And there's things that we're doing. There's things that are happening. We have strong economic development. We have all these things that weren't there at one time, and we should be proud. And here in the Twin Cities, should be really proud of what's happening, you know, on the Culture Corridor, but also all over the Twin Cities and the state.
And the state and the country of the world. I just had a conversation today with a new NACTI board member, brilliant young emerging Native leader, and I was saying to her, we were having this conversation about how... with all the troubles in the world and all the damage we've done to the world, you know, I think indigenous solutions are the solutions, right? And so now that's starting to percolate up. And as our former gallery director, Rory Wakemup, used to say, everyone's indigenous from somewhere. It's just the amount of time it's been since you were colonized, right? So how do we all find our way back to this indigeneity, which is inherent in all of us, really?
Exactly. And you and I have talked about that, too. And I've heard the great speaker, John Trudell, talk about that, too, that, you know, is that we've all from a tribe at one time or another. If you look far, far back into your, we're the last ones to hold on, though. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. Segment 3 is coming up, and we've been positive the whole time. I am digging this. This is Native Roots Radio, and we're with Robert Lilligren, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis.
Support for KFAI comes from The Dakota, presenting Hiromi's Sonic Wonder Monday, September 29th. On their latest release out there, Hiromi's Sonic Wonder takes jazz fusion to a new level by incorporating elements of rock, prog rock, and soul, creating an entirely new musical experience. Each track on Out There is a distinct musical journey, yet the entire album highlights the entire group's cohesive chemistry and balance. More information about Hiromi's Sonic Wonder at The Dakota can be found at dakotacooks.com.
Governor Peggy Flanagan, and I want to be your next United States Senator, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone, and we want Lieutenant Governor to be our next Senator. I appreciate her doing that. I corralled her, Robert, at the fair, probably a little before you saw her. I had to ask her to do that, and she had no problem. She's done bumpers for us over the years and been on the show many times. And
well, for folks who don't know, Peggy Flanagan is our current Lieutenant Governor. She's my whiter sister, and she is running for the U.S. Senate for an open seat. And
yeah,
I think has a very, very good shot at winning.
Absolutely, I agree. Hey, I just got to say this. I didn't see you yesterday. I was at the elder picnic, and oh my God, I've never seen so many elders. Oh,
I heard it was great. And NACTI was a sponsor of the event, along with a lot of others. But I just heard super positive things. I was actually up in Mille Lacs, in the Mille Lacs Reservation. We had a three-day staff retreat. I was busy planning for the next 3 years, so I had to miss it. But I heard it was just great.
Yeah, well, we saw the Make Voting a Tradition was there, table. There was a couple NACTIs. Oh, geez, Native American Community Development Institute. I finally fell into that hole, Robert. Sorry. Geez.
And I think did you have one of the big coordinators was Maren Hardy, and I think you had her on, didn't you, recently to talk about it?
Yeah. Well, I had her on like three times, and I had her on the day before it too. And it was funny. She wants to take your job. She was saying that she wants to host a show sometime during the show, and I went, okay.
I think she would be great.
Yeah, well, I have to still beg you to do it when I go on vacation, too, because we have that Brown Institute kind of vibe going here.
We're professionally trained.
Yes. Well, I know you are. Well, we've tiptoed around. We've talked really positive here. Are we ready to talk about free speech and who does that apply to? And geez, what are you thinking? How are you feeling about things?
It's hard to tell who it applies to. It feels very, very much like McCarthyism, right? And people are afraid to say the wrong thing about the, you know, and it all was kind of triggered by the murder of Charlie Kirk, right? And ironically, I mean, whether you agree with the guy or not, I don't. But he shouldn't have been murdered, and that's bad. But ironically, you know, he was a major free speech advocate.
Yeah.
Right? And now people are getting fired and canceled for just saying anything critical about him. And so it's kind of the opposite of free speech. And, of course, the GOP and the MAGA folks were the biggest voices against cancel culture, when they felt they were the ones being canceled. Now they're just canceling everyone. And, you know, Jimmy Kimmel is taken off the air temporarily. I did just hear, just before I came on, that Jon Stewart is going to be hosting on The Daily Show tonight in response to this. So I'm sure he's going to be red hot. So I'll be watching that tonight for sure. But it's just crazy. People are losing their jobs in, you know, in any realm, media, education, for saying anything critical about this person.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have people out there that are really stepping up and saying things like, you know, the things that you're doing are illegal. And we have a midterm coming up in less than a year, and you better lawyer up. And I appreciate that kind of talk, because this is just outright illegal, ridiculous, and lying. And the 30-35% MAGA people are digging it, and they don't care. And but we know that hopefully there'll be things going down with these people that are doing this. I mean, he's hired so many incompetent people. Did you see the FBI? That person, the head of the FBI, has never been in the FBI. He doesn't know what's going on. He's a podcaster. Doesn't he have a radio show like you and I? He's a podcaster.
He's a lowly podcaster. I think it's clear to everyone that this president's objective was not to run a government. It was to destroy democracy, destroy a government. So you put these incompetent people in place, and they're shredding federal institutions. And, you know, I'm a reform guy. Change is good. But this is harming people. And it's this prevailing attitude that as long as it's not harming me, or as long as it's not harming people harming people like me, it's okay, right? And it's not okay. And there's this odd mentality going through, you know, this MAGA mentality where, you know, sort of white supremacy, it benefits me, people voting against their own self-interest, but just to keep things out from other people from getting things, right?
Well, I just can't, and I don't know. We're a child of the 60s and a teen of the 70s, and I don't remember And I could be wrong, during the Vietnam War or during 1968 when all hell broke loose, similar to this, if the press, mainstream media was so complicit, I don't remember that or know that or old enough to know that.
Right. It seemed like, and I'm with you, who knows, that wasn't my focus back then, you know, kind of where's the next party was more my focus at the time. But it does seem like there was at least attempt to be balanced in news reporting. And, you know, I mean, there's always a political sort of leaning connected to periodicals or TV stations, but it seemed like there was an effort to show both sides. It was an effort to respect different opinions, and that's that's not how it is now, right? It's
right.
How do I shred my perceived enemy?
Well, that's even in sports. If you listen to the sports people now, they're just yelling into the screen. I just don't buy in both sides do it. I just don't buy in that. And that's what the media now is talking about every chance they get. And I don't know if it's because they're fearful of getting canceled or what, but gruesome, my goodness.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, risk it, right? I respect people like who have big platforms like Jimmy Kimmel or like a Stephen Colbert or someone like that. You know, they just went for it and they're suffering consequences because of it, but at least they did it, right?
And then
a lot is getting kind of sparked here locally. And we had a horrible mass shooting at a Catholic church and school here just a few weeks back. And children died and elders died. And so that has sparked more sort of vitriolic back and forth. And, you know, and then locally we had a series of mass shootings so far. No fatalities, but you know, just a few days apart. All around the Native community, some involving the Native community. And there was a mass shooting where 5 people were shot, one where 8 people were shot near a homeless encampment. And it just seems to be heating up and ramping up, you know, more than what I would like to see, which is cooling down and calming down.
Well, again, for me, I do not have any problem with hunters. I don't have a problem, you know, with fishermen or any of that stuff. But when you have these kind of guns and they keep on talking about it's mental health and things like that, well, first thing it is, it's the guns. And we need to talk about that. And, you know, I don't know if we talked about this, Robert, but I can't believe how many times I saw the murder of Charlie Kirk on the internet. Right. And I mean, it just popped up. I wasn't even looking for it. And what, 20 years after Kennedy was assassinated? I mean, then we saw the Zapruder films. It's just too much.
It is too much. And I have managed to not see it. I can't watch that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He was one guy. Again, whether you agreed with him or not, he shouldn't have been murdered. But he was a huge gun advocate. He was a provocateur, right? He said things deliberately to anger people, and mostly kind of lived his values and died his values, I guess. But there have been other more heinous crimes going on in the shadow of this Charlie Kirk murder, and you know, and no one's paying attention to those, you know. And so it's kind of sucking the oxygen out of our news culture, I guess, and then with all the people being canceled, academics being fired, people being fired from their jobs for criticizing.
Right.
Yeah. It's not where I thought we would be in 2025.
No, I mean, really good point. And I want to tiptoe around more of this, but I got to bring up this whole Republican infatuation against transgenders. They have to bring this up on everything. And now it's reported that his roommate, the shooter's roommate, isn't even transgender. That was just put out there. And, all I have to say is this when it comes to being transgender is like Caitlyn Jenner's transgender and she's Republican. That's all I want to say. They're people, for goodness sake. I mean, they're not.
They're all people, right? And it's a small percentage of our population. You know, it's... who really cares what someone else's gender expression is, you know, and the fact that our transgender brothers and sisters, relatives are being so vilified right now, it's just, It's shocking. And it makes me wonder what goes on in your head to feel like someone else's gender expression is threatening you, right? Why are you so insecure in your own gender identity that someone who has a different expression is threatening? I just don't get it. Exactly. We need that enemy, right? They need that enemy to organize around. But like the whole transgender athletes, I can't remember what the percentage of college athletes are transgender, but it's something like 0.003%, right? So this is what we're going to be all bent out of shape about, is this minuscule minority of athletes. I don't get it.
And yeah, it's the boogeyman. We had to have boogeymans when they're coming at us, and this is the boogey person. And as you know, Robert, and you know, I'm not a big, you know, I'm not a cultural expert when it comes to being Native, but transgender and Two-Spirit were the leaders of our tribes, and they could do everything. And that's something I always want to bring up and remind people out there that they were revered as Native Americans.
Well, I love it, and I love being part of this contemporary culture that we're defining, right? What does it mean to be Indigenous in the 21st century? And how often I'm in groups with my Two-Spirit brothers and sisters who are really assuming these historical sort of cultural roles, educators, carers, governance, artists. It really satisfies something.
Well, hey, thanks, Robert. We got another segment here. This is Native Roots Radio. We're with our friend Robert Lilligren, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And so happy that you can be with us for another segment and wrap this show up. Thank you so much. This is Native Roots Radio. We'll be right back after this short break.
What's up? This is Tool Man.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Oh, this is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka Hicha Wicha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are here with Robert Lilligren, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minnesota. And we're just wrapping it up here. I really appreciate these conversations. You know, I'm so happy we started out the way we did, too, because there are so many good things happening in our community, despite what's happening around us. And that's something I think is really Native.
I agree. And, you know, we used to talk a lot, and we still do, about our famous resilience. But this is beyond resilience, right? This is defining our own futures, right? Defining what culture means to us, what life means to us here. And in all this depressing news, it feels really good here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to doing a live broadcast with you. I hope that'll be okay with you. I put you on the spot here on live radio.
Yeah, of course. This is at the Indian Center 50th Anniversary Gala, right?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, cool. No, I'm looking forward to it, of course.
That's very cool. And just to celebrate that, and like you said, 50 years, there's so much blood, sweat, and tears when it came to visualizing this and then having it. And then now just recently remodeling it. I mean, visionary people are amongst us.
Right. And there's a lot of folks in the community, friends and colleagues, and they were kids in the Indian Center, right? And our good friend Carrie Day Aspinwall, she said, yeah, I was one of the first people, well, you know, in the door once it finally opened. And renowned architect, Native architect Sam Olbixen, who was the architect on that project, and wow, on a bunch of projects all around the American Indian Culture Corridor. But he was a kid who took part in their programs, and it's just really produced a lot of really amazing results, a lot of really amazing people. So you just wonder, you know, with the growth of the programming, the expansion of the cultural practices and programming there, what the next generations are going to accomplish.
Absolutely. And just, I get chills when I think about people like Clyde and Belcourt, who is American Indian Movement, one of the founders, and just those people that have had vision and didn't say no. And now we're reaping a lot of the benefits because of, we always talk about the seven generations before and after us.
Right. And, you know, I consider that whole generation the founders here, right? And we have this just wonderful density of the fruits of their labors, the Native organizations, Native people here in Minneapolis, and Native engagement, Native activism and advocacy, and we're losing a lot of them now, right? They're our ancestors now. And so I think it's important for everyone along the generational trajectory, but especially those of us who are, we're closer in age to them and kind of remember what their transformation, the transformation of their work here, and that we don't squander this. If there's something that keeps me up at night, it's that. Are we squandering these gifts? I don't think that we are, but I think it's very important that we continue to really be serious about how we build on their successes.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that your organization does well, and I think a lot of other organizations try to do, is really be welcoming for all our Native brothers and sisters, because we've talked about this before, Robert. We have, I believe, I think it was
150.
Yeah, tribes that are represented here, in 75,000 Native Americans just in Minneapolis, the urban Minneapolis. And I know we're here in St. Paul hiding out too.
Right, right. And yeah, it's an amazingly rich and complicated community. And so what's our relationship to the outside world, to our nations, to the outside governments? But what's our relationship to each other look like? You know, and I'm thrilled to work at a place like NACTI. I love what you said, Robert, and Chima Gwech, about us being welcoming. That was a theme that really percolated up at our recent 3-day staff strategic planning retreat. The sense that we're a welcoming organization, and we try to be a welcoming community. And, you know, other kinds of work here. We have a 50-plus-year-old leadership forum called the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, MUD, yes. M-U-I-D, and currently the chair of MUD, and we kind of grapple with this. What kind of an urban Indian community are we? You know, are we there's 150 kind of choices here, right? Mm-hmm. And we're on Dakota land, and how does that influence? And I'm going to share this. I was not planning to, but this, we're having this conversation just this earlier this week in this 3-day NACTI staff strategic planning retreat. And we were talking about, and I think about our community this way, it's international, right? We have 150 nations yes. represented in our metropolitan area. And so mm-hmm. that's international. And, you know, and I often think of the relationship between those of us who live in cities and those of us who live on reservations. And there's dynamic there, right? And how we can better join forces. And as we're having this conversation, one of the staff members was leading it about our international community. I started to think, well, you know, that's a more open and welcoming term than saying urban Indian or reservation Indian, right? We're an international community. And wow. So I've been thinking a lot about that just in the last few days. And I think I'm going to start using different vocabulary. And I always describe myself as a third generation Minneapolis urban Indian, right? Yeah. I'm really part of an international community that exists in Minneapolis. So I don't know. That's really wrong thinking, and I wasn't planning on talking about it tonight. But it's really come forward in my mind.
I think I have to agree with you now that you bring it up. Standing Rock, there was indigenous communities from all over the world putting up their flags each time they visited. And I was there, and Australia was there giving a flag and doing a ceremony. I mean, I like how you're thinking about that.
Yeah. So, again, it's new thinking for me. Standing Rock was such a pivotal point in, I think, modern culture, and certainly in the approach that I take to my work. And so I'm glad that you brought that up. I was pinpoint when I'm talking, especially to non-Native audiences, you know, the founding of AIM, you know, and then Standing Rock, and these are pivotal points for me.
Yeah, me too. That's amazing. We got a couple minutes left. I guess what I want to end up talking a little bit to you about, because of your background, but also you're a public figure too in the community, and people know you all around. How do we protect our soul, and well, first of all, let me back up before you answer that. I got a next meeting you have with your staff, I got to get the combination to the door. No, I'm just kidding.
Never.
But how do we protect our soul here in these dark days?
Well, I don't have all the answers here, but this was another huge topic of conversation at our recent retreat, and we're really elevating that. And it, you know, at NACD, we operate with an indigenous approach where we care for ourselves first, right, then our families, then our community or organization. And it's taken a while to really embrace that. And so now, what does self-care look like? You know, and it's in, we're looking to culture, traditional practices, elders, supporting each other, but really caring for ourselves. And, you know, it's sort of a lot of the icky stuff that's been happening here in the Twin Cities. And then nationally, you know, these dark times are really having an impact on people. And you can see that in relationships with each other. But we're really going to integrate and programatize more time with elders, cultural practices. And NACD is the smudge capital of the cultural corridor. People come to our office to smudge. We smudge a lot.
That was like my classroom. We did it before it was legal when I was teaching in St. Paul Public Schools. Hey, Robert, thank you so much for spending this whole hour with me. I really appreciate it. And great to see you, and keep up the great work. And I'm just, you know, pleased to call you a friend. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm back at you. I appreciate it. And yeah, take care. We'll see you soon. Giggle, Abaman.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Arts Radio. We'll see you tomorrow.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Mini 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 Native Roots Radio with Mini
Native. Support for KFAI comes from Crooner Supper Club, presenting Alma and Dina Wednesday, September 24th. For over 15 years, Alma and Dina has combined traditional South American instruments with Latin rhythms such as cumbia, salsa, folk, guajira, Latin rock, reggae, and other styles. With a diverse lineup of members from Chile, Mexico, Puerto Rico, and the USA, Alma and Dina brings a mix of musical flavors and invites the community to feel unified and represented by their always evolving diversity. More information about Alma and Dina at Crooner Supper Club is available at croonersmn.com.
Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Hey, we are really pleased and honored to have Sean Sherman, known as the sous chef. That's you're early for me to say sous chef and author. Ogola Lakota chef, author, and activist. You know, there's just so many different accolades that we could say about Sean, but he's well known, many awards winning. And Sean, I have you on for a couple of reasons today. One, that I'm blessed to have you on, and two, we have new things happening with you, and I want to talk a little bit about what's going on politically. But first, let's talk about what's new with you, Sean. And I know some exciting information's coming out. Welcome.
Well, you know, I mean, we have a lot of things going on this year because we're getting ready to launch our a new restaurant concept this winter sometime called Shota, which obviously refers to smoke in Dakota language. And it's going to be a cool Native barbecue joint right on Franklin, on 26th and Franklin. So just right there on the Native American Cultural Corridor, not too far from Indian Center and all the other places. And that'll be a super cool, fun space for just a new space for us to all hang out. And behind that, restaurant, of course, is this huge kitchen in that building, and we're launching a program called Meals for Native Institutions so we can start doing large format foods for schools and hospitals all across the state. And we're getting ready to launch that same program in Bozeman, Montana, as we're getting ready to make our first food lab with our nonprofit Natives and stretching out that way. And so we're getting ready to hire that first position basically right away. We're trying to get that position released today, actually. So I have our first regional director. And then beyond that, I'm just my life is a little travel heavy, and I'm getting ready for a travel run. But we'd be hitting a lot of really cool spaces, working with some fun folks out in Seattle and Rapid City and New York for Climate Week, and Sacramento and LA, and kind of all over the place the next couple months. But when I get back to Minneapolis in early November, my second book launch will happen, called The Turtle Island, with my co-authors Kate Nelson and Kristen Donnelly. And this was a little over 3 years of work, and it's a pretty massive book, and it's really pretty amazing to see it in real form, because I've only ever seen it in the PDFs, and you know, the photography is amazing and beautiful. And we're just really excited to have this live on the shelf, because this looks at all of North America from basically Mexico through Alaska, and all the various regions, and just trying to showcase diversity of North America and get like, people to, you know, see past colonial borders, see past who's speaking English and Spanish, and realize that there's a lot of indigeneity here that we could be celebrating. And we need to start working towards that, of understanding the true foundation of culinary in North America through our indigenous lens.
Hey, well, that's exciting. Your first book, Indigenous Kitchen, earned a Beard Award, I believe, and inspired people across the country to explore Indigenous foods.
Absolutely. You know, and when we started that book, we started it way back in 2015. So that was 10 years ago, or more than that nowadays, because it was early. And Beth Dooley and I back then with that one just started working hard. And I just wanted to create that book as an educational component, because I started doing a lot of traveling and speaking engagements and pop-up dinners and working with different tribes. And I just wanted to have something to carry around to kind of showcase the philosophy around what we were doing, with kind of highlighting what are indigenous foods today, and how are we, you know, how was I approaching that as a chef, you know, and, you know, utilizing the philosophy I created back then of just cutting out colonial ingredients and removing things like dairy and wheat flour and cane sugar and beef, pork, and chicken, you know, and maybe unpopularly sometimes removing fry bread. But at the time, it was worth the commitment to just showcase that there was so much amazing, cool culinary foods out there, you know, that fry bread can always have its place and be around and it's cool. But we have so much more that can identify us as indigenous peoples all over the place. And that one piece shouldn't identify all of us as indigenous peoples, you know.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. Sean, we have a national audience here. How do people catch up and follow you and what you're doing on social media, website? Could you let people on that are driving around in their car know how to get in touch with the great work that you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, people can find me pretty easily just by going to my name. So SeanSherman.com, I have a lot of places there, and you can find leads to all the other organizations, and my nonprofit natives.org, which is growing rather quickly. You can find links to awamini.com there, and Indigenous Food Lab. And, you know, if you want to watch some of the educational videos that our team has been putting up, you can go to Indigenous Food Lab on YouTube, and we have over 200 video educational native videos uploaded already the past couple of years. So that's been a lot of body of work too that we continue to do, and we're excited to start doing some of those in Montana region also very soon here.
Well, I remember when you just had a food truck, and is that still around? I know it's sometimes parked outside Awamni. Do you still have the food truck?
Yeah, we still have it. Well, we kind of converted it to a food trailer. We sold the original physical truck to White Earth a long time ago, and then we kept the brand to Tonka Truck, and so we put it on a smaller trailer, kind of vowed to never put a kitchen on an engine and never again, because that was difficult with that truck always breaking down on us. But now we have a trailer, and we drag it out quite a bit, so we go to a few different events here and there, and, you know, a lot of times if there's special events at Awamni, we'll drop it below Awamni down there too. And so it's nice to have, because it has come in as a really a great resource, just to be able to continue to kind of spread out, you know. And we're looking forward to, as long as, I mean, I know there's some news that Farm Aid might be shutting down because of the strikes, but if it does go through, our Awamni team is featuring some foods there, which is going to be, hopefully we'll be able to pull it off if it doesn't get canceled or moved. But right now we've been working really hard on creating bison corn dogs that we're calling res dogs for the day.
Yeah, heck yeah, that sounds great. You know, I just, Sean, I just have to switch gears right now. And one of the things that's going on here, and you get around the country and, well, around the world too, with all this gun violence, and it's just not okay. I've talked to my guests about this a lot, and how are you protecting your soul, and how are you getting through this, being, you know, a figurehead out there too?
I mean, I think it's really important to talk about everything directly, and not just hide behind social media memes and, you know, just hide behind social media angst. And I think that we need to really come together to have conversations, because it's important for us to have conversations to really try to pull us more towards the center, instead of trying to be left and right. Like, we have to really move our dial towards being human, you know. And gun violence is a massive issue in the United States, you know, because, like, I grew up with guns because we grew up on the res or in the country, but we utilize guns as tools, you know. We used it for hunting, and they were around if we needed them, you know. And we were taught never to point a gun at a person, you know. It's a simple rule like that, right? And so it's really hard, because you see so much division and hate, you know, going on out there, and, you know, blaming of people. And I just feel like, you know, we really need to come together, because there's a lot of hypocrisy going on. There's a lot of, you know, kind of, I would call it false morals and values, because they'll blame one side and, you know, strengthen their own, even if people are doing the same thing. And so, like, there's obviously a lot of feelings out there, and I feel like we need to be talking about that, but we need to be making solutions, not just blaming one side or the other. I mean, because guns are the problem, and they're trying to say guns aren't the problem, it's the humans. Then why are we giving humans guns then, you know? So we need to figure something out way better.
Yeah, well, and then, you know, again, how are you protecting your own personal soul? I mean, you're talking about this, but it's got to be a little angst sometimes when you're out in public in a big public area.
I just feel like now is not the time to be silent with all of these things, because, you know, what I see is a lot of the rise of authoritarianism happening here in the United States. I see a lot of dehumanization of people in color. And as coming from indigenous communities and black communities and other communities across the United States, like, that's always been a constant for us to be able to, you know, have all of this kind of racist rhetoric and all of this kind of dehumanization against us for who we are and where we grew up and what color our skin is and all of these things, and what language we speak, whatever it might be. So I think it's really important to be strong. If you have a platform, then we better utilize it, you know. And we should be really working on coming together. Like, we shouldn't be infighting as indigenous peoples or people of color in general. And we should be strengthening ourselves by, you know, coming together over a table. And that's why I stick with food, because I think food is a really powerful language. I think food really pulls people together from different perspectives. And I think that, you know, we can set a table for people to come together to have real conversations and to make real solutions, you know, instead of just hiding behind money and power and all these things, you know. But I do not believe in white supremacy. I do not believe in all the hate that's going on out there. And I will definitely stand up and have my words against it.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, we have our friend, Lieutenant Governor, running for Senate, and really excited to support her. I know I've been down to the Sous Chef, or to Awamni, excuse me, for a lot of things that she showed up for, and it's great to have her in the community, and also a voice for indigenous people across Turtle Island.
Absolutely. You know, I kind of run into Peggy quite often and a huge supporter and really happy to help out wherever we can with her campaign and would love to see her move towards that seat, you know, and we just I think a lot of us have been very proud of Peggy's successes, you know, and politicians are a crazy world to put yourself into because you're thrown in the middle of it, you know, and you have everything on all sides. And I can't imagine the kind of, you know, hate and love that's coming in on all the sides, you know. So it's a lot. I'm sure it's a lot to juggle, but you know, she's a strong individual. And
you are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.